For the News and Observer and NC Insider, I'm Brian Murphy, your host for this episode of Under the Dome. I'm joined by Will Doran of the News and Observer this week. And Will, we try to give listeners three things to be watching for in North Carolina politics on this weekly show. But really, right now, all eyes are on one thing, and that's the North Carolina Supreme Court and when it will take up arguments in the redistricting appeal. You were at the trial. You've written extensively about the ruling. I want to talk about that, but since we do try to give people three things to talk about, a couple other things that maybe people should be aware of. I've been hearing that the interim committees, including the one on Medicaid expansion, could start meeting in late January. So the legislature has been running basically skeletal sessions, hasn't been doing much of anything since they passed the redistricting maps, passed the budget. That could begin to change at the end of the month, and I think there'll be a lot of interest, at least from the media and probably from the public, on what that expansion committee does.
Yeah, that was interesting. You know, some of the picks of the lawmakers to be on that committee raised some eyebrows when they were made, you know, because it's, you know, some of the Republicans who are open to Medicaid expansion. And I mean, even the fact that they're having a committee at all indicates that, you know, this is something they're thinking about. You know, there's no requirement for them to meet and talk about Medicaid expansion. So the fact that they're actually talking about it, I think, has given some people a little bit of hope, even though obviously that did not happen in the budget as some Democrats have been hoping for.
Yeah, and obviously there's still vehement opposition, I think, among some Republicans, particularly in the House, to expanding Medicaid. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And then, unfortunately, one of the things we've been talking about for 2 years now is COVID and the Omicron variant. They continue to disrupt daily life here in North Carolina and elsewhere in the country. Everything from schools and testing, and we both have young children, so dealing with daycare and workforce participation and supply chain issues, and of course, the ruling last week from the U.S. Supreme Court on the Biden administration's vaccine or test policy. You know, I think North Carolina has actually done a pretty good job, at least here in Wake County. I can't speak for other parts of the state, about popping up testing sites and being able to get tested and get those results within a day, sometimes within the same day. Obviously, the state set a record for cases last week, and no sign that that's going to end anytime soon. Although, you know, other places in the country are starting to see the peak, starting to think they have reached that peak. There was an interesting policy put forth for state employees last week that may, you know, provide some relief to these schools, which are really struggling with employees being out.
Yeah, our colleague Don Vaughn wrote about that. So if any listeners haven't seen that, go back and look that up in the archives on the News and Observer website. But yeah, it's, you know, all state employees get PTO for volunteer work or community service, and they came out and changed that now. And they said, since Omicron is just wreaking such havoc on the public schools right now, that they can actually use that PTO and go work as a substitute teacher in their local school. And they'll actually get double pay. They'll get not only their paid time off from their normal job from the state, but they'll also be allowed to, you know, collect the paycheck that, you know, that you get as a sub. So, you know, it's kind of, I guess, one way of trying to keep the schools operating, even as we see this, you know, huge resurgence in COVID right now.
Yeah, and you see what it's doing to the bus drivers, to people who work in the lunch, the cafeterias, obviously teachers. It's a real issue, and hopefully, I think everyone hopes that we'll be done with at least the Omicron variant here, you know, maybe by the end of the month. But
Well, you know, Brian, it wasn't too long ago that North Carolina actually let high school seniors drive the bus. So, you know, maybe if there is a driver shortage, we can go back to that policy. I don't know when that ended. Maybe sometime in like the 80s or 90s. If any listeners know about that, let us know. But I've talked to people who said that they were bus drivers when they were high school students here.
I am thankful that my child is a walker. I'm not sure I would want high school students driving any buses. I'm not sure, having been a high school student and a not very careful driver, and I'm dating myself here, but I was a high school driver in before the time of cell phones. So I didn't have to worry about that distraction, just, you know, all the other normal teenage distractions. Not sure I would be putting my kid on a bus driven by a high school student, but you know, desperate times. So let's get back to the thing that's on everybody's mind, and I mean, you know, this redistricting, I think will once it's all finished, and we don't know when that will be, will sort of unlock everything else. So the primaries can really begin in earnest, and we'll be dedicating a lot more time to what I think are some fascinating primaries: the U.S. Senate race on the Republican side, the Democratic primary in the 6th district, or the current 6th district, which is Durham, Orange, and a little bit of Wake County. There are some fascinating primaries, but it's really hard to write about those at the moment because everybody's on hold waiting to see what the courts are going to do. You were in the court day in and day out for the trial. You've read at least most of the opinion, I would imagine, at this point. I've tried to muddle through a lot of it. It is long and it is dense, and it's very interesting. Let's just start there. Your takeaway on what the three-judge panel decided, and then we'll get to what comes next.
Sure. And yeah, I mean, it is a 260-page opinion, so we'd be here for a few hours if we wanted to go through the whole thing. I mean, yeah, I tweeted about this when it dropped. There's like a 3 or 4 page long tangent on like English history in the 1600s. You know, it really gets into the weeds in some parts of the legal arguments. But the bottom line is that the judges basically found two things. They said, one, these maps are intentionally gerrymandered to help Republicans. So that kind of pokes a big hole in the GOP argument, you know, that, you know, they just drew the maps and it just so happened to, you know, like a lot of problems. The judges said, no, these are intentional gerrymanders. But they said, however, we don't believe that there's anything in the state constitution that actually bans that. You know, they said obviously a racial gerrymander would be unconstitutional, but just because most Black voters vote for Democrats does not mean that drawing maps that disadvantage Democrats inherently disadvantages Black voters. And so since it's not racial gerrymandering, it's just partisan gerrymandering, they said, well, we don't believe that the state constitution bans partisan gerrymandering, so we're going to let these maps stand. However, that is the complete opposite conclusion that a similar three-judge panel reached just a couple years ago in 2019 over basically, you know, nearly identical maps. You know, the 2019 case was over a 10-3 congressional map. You know, this new map is a 10-4 congressional map. So, you know, they're very similar. Two different courts have looked at it and reached just completely opposite conclusions. So, you know, the reason why they were able to reach opposite conclusions is because this isn't really an issue that is settled in state law. You know, there's some parts of the Constitution that are very broad, very vague, that deal with, you know, these issues of, you know, free elections and things like that. And it's never really been taken up by the Supreme Court. And so now we're going to get that. And the Supreme Court is actually going to take it up.
I think this is an important point, and you've made it to me. I would not have thought about this. But in 2019, as you mentioned, this three-judge panel decided that the maps didn't pass muster. And rather than appeal that to the Supreme Court or appeal it up, Republican lawmakers just redrew maps. Maps that got some Democratic buy-in, maps that now gave us our current 8-5 congressional breakdown. Maps that even though Democrats thought, you know, agreed to in some parts, didn't really help with the state House and state Senate, at least didn't help them win elections. But the important part there is that they didn't appeal it up to the Supreme Court. So there is no, you know, law of the land per se here in North Carolina. I wasn't covering the state as closely then. I was covering the delegation. Was that sort of a consideration at the time? Looking back, it looks like a, you know, why didn't they do it? It's sort of a head scratcher. But now it allows this court to kind of make this ruling because there is no Supreme Court doctrine.
Right. And, you know, if you accept the argument that judges are politicians and that in a political case like this, their political leanings might, you know, influence how they vote on a case, you know, which it's, you know, a topic that's up for debate. some people say, yes, absolutely. Some people say, oh, no, how could you question the motives of the Supreme Court justices like that? But, I mean, the fact is, you know, every judge is elected in a partisan election, oftentimes with millions and millions of dollars, you know, of backing from their party or, you know, PACs affiliated with their party. So if you look at it that way, in 2019, when that case was up, the Supreme Court had, I believe, a 6-1 Democratic majority at the time. And so, you know, I think Republicans looked at it and said, look, we just lost a trial. We're almost certainly going to lose if this goes to the Supreme Court. But if we don't take it to the Supreme Court, then they can't create a ruling that's going to affect what we do in 2021, which is exactly what happened. They redrew the maps, but then when they were redistricting again this year, there was no, you know, Supreme Court precedent binding them. And so when they got sued again, they were also able, and you saw this in some of their court filings in this most recent case, to just completely dismiss that 2019 hearing as like, oh, well, you know, that was just an unpublished Superior Court decision, you know, that has no binding appellate precedent or anything like that. Which allowed this new panel, which was a Republican majority panel, to, you know, override that. So it was, you know, it was a really smart legal decision on their part, because now we've gone from, you know, having a 6-1 Supreme Court to a 4-3 Supreme Court. And then that actually raises another big issue in this redistricting fight, which is that three of the seven justices on the Supreme Court have been asked to recuse themselves by the two sides, two Democrats and one Republican. So, you know, if all three of them recuse themselves, you could get to, you know, a potentially tied Supreme Court, you know, or you could also get to, you know, a case where it's even potentially a Republican majority that would be hearing this case.
I just want to take one step back. I mean, the allowing those 2020 elections to happen before there was Supreme Court doctrine gave time for a Republican Chief Justice to win. And if I'm not mistaken, right, the Chief Justice is the one who appoints, you know, which panels hear these kinds of cases, and appointed a 2-1 Republican panel as opposed to a 2-1 Democratic panel, which I would imagine a Chief Justice Sherry Beasley would have done in this case.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably safe to assume.
I go back to the thinking before the 2016 U.S. presidential election, and McConnell and the Republicans in the Senate, their gambit that not to confirm Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court, and I come back to the same rationale. Like, if they confirm Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court and hold the hearings, then he's definitely on the court. If they don't hold the hearings and Hillary Clinton wins, well, then Merrick Garland's probably going to be on the court anyhow. But if you don't, and Donald Trump wins, then all of a sudden you have a chance to put a Republican or a Republican nominee on the court. Sort of a no-lose scenario in that case. By waiting, you're either going to get the result you're going to have right now, or you get a different result. And I sort of feel like that's, you know, the North Carolina Republicans adopted a similar, well, let's wait and see what happens with these elections before we challenge this.
Exactly. And the Republicans swept the judicial elections in 2020. They won every Supreme Court seat that was on the ballot. They won every appellate court seat that was on the ballot. You know, they did really well. And so, like I said, it's gone from a 6-1 Democratic majority to a 4-3 majority. You know, and then there's a couple more seats up in 2022. So we'll see what happens. You know, it could very soon be a Republican majority on the court. So,
which would make this case look much, much differently moving forward. So, you know, listeners to the show probably know what happened, but the three judge panel upheld the districts, which, even though they said they're pro Republican gerrymander, intentional pro Republican partisan gerrymander, basically said, as you said earlier, they don't have the right to overturn this. It's going to get to the Supreme Court. I just saw that the Ohio Supreme Court, you know, obviously they have a different state constitution in Ohio, but the Ohio Supreme Court, which had a 4-3 Republican majority, overturned their GOP passed districts for the same partisan gerrymander reasons in a 4-3 decision, with the Chief Justice, a Republican, siding with the more liberal members of the court. I covered this. I'll back up one more step. I covered the Supreme Court hearing where you know, these North Carolina cases made it all the way to the Supreme Court about partisan gerrymandering. And what the U.S. Supreme Court basically said is, not our issue. Like, we'll spend all of the federal courts will be bogged down with every single partisan gerrymander redraw. So this is not our issue. We'll handle racial gerrymandering, but we're not going to get involved in partisan gerrymandering. Kicked it back to the states. That's how we got the ruling in 2019. And that's why not only in North Carolina, but Ohio and many other states across the country, you're seeing the state Supreme Courts deciding this issue.
Exactly. Yeah, you're exactly right. The U.S. Supreme Court said this is an issue for the states to deal with, not us.
And so here we are. Well, what is your, you know, obviously you wrote last week about the recusals. Let's just assume none of the judges are going to recuse themselves. I think that's the most obvious assumption to take. So that leaves you with a 4-3 Democratic majority. Not asking you to predict, but I mean, I think a lot of people see 4-3 Democratic majority. There's going to be a 4-3 decision. These districts are going to be overturned, and either the legislature is going to be drawing them or some sort of special master is going to be drawing them. Give us a sense, and you've covered these issues for a long time. What happens next? This is going to go to the Supreme Court. Any sense of when, how long it might take, what kind of remedies they could offer?
So those are all very good and very open-ended questions. I think the safe bet is that the Supreme Court is going to try to act on this really quickly. I mean, you know, we've said before, like a lot of times these redistricting lawsuits take years and years and years to play out. The Supreme Court does not want that to happen this time. They moved back the primary from March to May specifically to give themselves more time to deal with this case, just in case they did end up overturning the maps, which, you know, it would be kind of silly to do that and then drag their feet once it actually gets to appeal. So I would imagine that they're going to be hearing this case very soon. We could see, you know, some direction from the court this week on, you know, when they plan on, you know, setting deadlines for, you know, the kind of the final, you know, filings from the sides, when they, you know, plan to have the oral arguments, things like that. Because, you know, the other part of it is, even though the primary is in May, really the machinery of the election kind of needs to get started up by, you know, mid to late February, maybe early March, because, you know,
well, the state board after the ruling and the panel said, hey, filing has to begin again on February 24th.
Exactly. So, you know, if filing is going to begin February 24th, you know, kind of the feeling from the legislature when they originally passed the maps as well, we want to, you know, give candidates a month, you know, between when we pass the maps and when filing starts, so that they can kind of look at the districts, figure out what everyone else is going to do, figure out what they're going to do. You know, so that means, you know, that the Supreme Court would, you know, need to have a ruling in, you know, a couple days if they're going to give the legislature a couple weeks, you know, to draw these maps. Now, I don't know if it's going to happen that quickly. You know, who knows, maybe candidates won't get the advantage of an entire month to check out the new maps before they have to make up their minds. Maybe they'll only have a week or a couple days, or it could be that, you know, it ends up being that it's just too much of a time crunch. And, you know, no matter what the court decides, even if they strike the maps down, that decision wouldn't go into effect until 2024. That is a possibility. We've seen that in the past in North Carolina, with courts ruling maps unconstitutional, but the ruling came too close to the election. So they said, well, oh, well, I guess the election will just have to go ahead anyways.
Such a ruling would inflame Democrats, I would imagine, because they'll say, wait a second, then the state lawmakers who are going to pass the 2024 map are going to be elected in 2022 under this map, which you've already ruled is unconstitutional. No doubt would set off another set of legal challenges, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, and I mean, you can go down that whole rabbit hole because, you know, I mean, you know, we've been redrawing the maps, but under court orders for several years now. But, you know, each time the legislature always, you know, uses a rule that says the maps have to protect incumbents. And well, most of those incumbents were elected under unconstitutional maps. So if you say that we have to protect incumbents, then that kind of bakes in a little bit of the gerrymandering anyways. So it's just, you know, I mean, you can go down that rabbit hole as long as you want.
Which I did last week. I went back and the story didn't publish, but I did a lot of research and with your help. I mean, North Carolina has been in court since the 1980s on either the congressional maps or the state house maps or the state Senate maps. There have been cases all the way back to the 80s, and that's only what I found. I'm sure there are other cases, although, I got to thinking, I guess the technology has made this a lot different. With computers and supercomputing that we can do now, it is a lot easier to draw millions of districts, millions of maps, and compare them all against each other and try to find the best one for your party or your outcome or whatever you're trying to do. That probably in the 60s and 70s and earlier, we've been redistricting forever. It was a lot harder to just create millions of maps and compare them against each other.
Yeah, well, and even back in time, you know, we would go for decades without ever redrawing the maps after the census, you know, and so the districts would be all out of whack, but just nobody really cared. Because it was a one-party state, you know, every district was going to elect a Democrat, you know. It was really only, you know, after the civil rights movement, when black people were basically allowed to vote again in North Carolina. And then also you started getting more actual political competition between the two parties that redistricting actually started to matter. And that was basically in the 80s.
Yeah. It's, I'm sure there are books. I'm sure some of our friends that we political scientists that we quote all the time have written enormous books on this, but it's a fascinating topic to me. And I probably need to learn more about it. I'm going to make that a New Year's resolution by the 2030. By the time the 2030 cases make it into the courts, hopefully I'll have a much better understanding of the history of it. Well, let's try to conclude with this. Do we think that when it's all said and done, you know, we're going to have maps, we're going to have primaries in May, and everyone's going to have to live with that? Is that your sense that this expedited timeline is going to give us a final resolution? By the time filing, you know, ends in March and the primaries happen in May?
I think that's the hope of, I think it's fair to say of both sides. I mean, you know, everyone just kind of, you know, knows that somebody's going to lose, but, you know, they want to know sooner rather than later. And that was kind of the court's reasoning too on speeding up the time frame. It's like, okay, look, like we've heard lots of these arguments in the past. Like we all kind of know what's going on here. Let's just go ahead and get this done, so it doesn't hang over the election and drag on for years. Like, we're just going to deal with this. So, you know, if the ruling does come down, and this kind of gets to one of the questions you asked me earlier, and I'll end on this note. If the ruling does come down and the court does overturn the maps, there's basically three options. And how close the ruling happens to the election could determine which option they go with. How much they trust or don't trust the legislature could determine which outcome they go with. But basically, one, if the maps get overturned, you could have, you know, option A is just send it back to the legislature and tell them, okay, try again. And that's kind of the default option. But there's two other options. They don't have to necessarily send it back to the legislature. Now, obviously, the legislature would fight that if they decided not to. And so, you know, that could open up a whole other, legal battle. But they could hire an outside expert. They call them special masters, which I always thought was such a silly word. But, you know, just basically some college professor who has, you know, this algorithm that can come up with a set of like millions of maps and say, okay, well, you know, this is the most fair, the most reasonable, the most normal outcome. Go with something like that. They could do that. Or some of the plaintiffs in this case have actually proposed their own substitute maps, and the court could decide, yeah, those look good enough, we'll go with those. Again, either of those options would, you know, elicit a large negative reaction from the legislature. They obviously have, you know, they want to be in control. That's how redistricting usually works in North Carolina. The legislature usually gets to run the process. So
yeah, and Tim Moore, I spoke with him last week, made it very clear that the legislature is responsible. You know, if you look at the state constitution, the legislature is responsible for drawing these maps, not the governor, not the courts, not a special master. Very, very clear in that point. I think the one thing we can all agree on is the lawyers are going to continue to get paid.
Yes. Yes. I had an attorney tell me once that the best job security you could have in North Carolina was to be an election law attorney. if you go to law school, because the cases just never, ever end. And so far, he has not been proven wrong.
Running on 50 years now of cases, election law cases in North Carolina. Well, Will, we know that you'll be covering these trials for us and the outcome at newsandobserver.com. I appreciate your time today. For Will Doran, I'm Brian Murphy. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Under the Dome.
For more from our politics team, subscribe to the News and Observer at newsobserver.com/subscribe. Follow us on Twitter at Under the Dome and NC Insider, and sign up for our weekly political newsletter at newsobserver.com/newsletters. Thanks for listening.